Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Shelley Wilson Show. I am an intuitive medium, a Reiki master, and a spiritual teacher. My mission is to assist others on their own journey into consciousness and encourage them to live an authentic life through awareness and empowerment. Coming from a place of respect, truth, integrity, and love, I honor your free will and recognize that you are co-creating your reality with the universe. My intention is to bring understanding, help you to heal from the past, and realize your full potential. I invite you to begin your life in a new way and tap into your inner power as you explore who you really are. Refrain from simply existing and elect to live your life fully without regret. It is time to let go of the past, live in the present, and look to the future, for it is this attitude that will transform you. Today's special guest is Jack Churchwood. Jack served 6 years in the United States Navy and went on to earn his Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from the University of South Florida. Jack has over 30 years' experience in the aerospace and defense industry, having worked on both manned and unmanned space and military platforms with the same firm. In addition to earning the rank of Eagle Scout and participating in archaeological digs as a youth, Jack is a fourth-generation engineer and fourth-generation patent holder and identifies himself as a Tibetan Buddhist. Jack's research into the life and theories of his great-grandfather, James Churchwood, author of the series of books about the lost continent of Mu, is conducted using his technical expertise, unique connections, special viewpoint, and access to a portion of James' original source materials. Armed with his knowledge and capabilities, Jack seeks to create a more complete understanding of James Churchwood and his theories. And I would like to welcome Jack Churchwood to the show today.
Well, thank you, Shelley.
Hi, Jack. I'm so delighted to have you. And for the listeners, I just have to mention that we first met 2 years ago at Dolores Cannon's Ozark Mountain Transformation Conference. And then we got to see each other again just a few months ago.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Quite a fun event.
It is. And definitely, it really is putting you out there, too. I have to say, just acknowledging that, I don't know if you've had any prior experience with conferences such as that, but it's definitely a great platform to put people out of their comfort zone and out of the closet, so to speak.
Well, actually, I really don't have very many. I didn't have much experience before the first conference, and now I have two under my belt. But
yes,
I thought it was an excellent. I thought it was an excellent opportunity for people of like mind to get together and talk about things that aren't normally discussed in normal conversations.
Yes, yes, and I think that's good. And we have to look at normal as we're putting in quotes, because truly, what is normal, right?
Absolutely.
And I can see you smiling all the way from Oklahoma, and I know you're in Florida. And the great thing is each one of us are having these experiences, and we definitely recognize that sometimes we've just got to step up to the plate, so to speak, and have that courage to be who we are.
That's right. But sometimes it's difficult for people to overcome the societal pressures and whatnot and strike forth.
Yes, absolutely. But that's why we're here, I believe, is to have that courage. So first of all, Jack, I want to give your website, and that's jackchurchwood.com. And you also have one, I believe,
It's actually jack.churchwood.com.
Got you.
W-A-R-D.
Yes, want to make sure we have the dots in there. And it's jack, J-A-C-K, dot, C-H-U-R-C-H, W-A-R-D.com. So you've got lots of information on your website. First thing, you've got your smiling face greeting us and welcoming us to the site. So, Jack, I know that the listeners are definitely excited to hear more about you and your work and the books and about your grandfather's work. And so to begin with, I'd like to just hear a little bit about you and your journey. What got you even started in looking at this before we even talk about the research that you began with your grandfather's information, your great-grandfather?
Well, that is a good question. In my family, early on, none of the churchward family acknowledged my great-grandfather's works, and it was poo-pooed. And I was we didn't even have copies in our home library. And my father was very, very dead set against it. And in fact, one time, a story my mother told me was that some individuals, I was born and raised on Clearwater Beach, and my father lived there. And on the other side, in this enormous house with this big lawn, they invited my father to come visit and talk to them about my great-grandfather's works.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
I'm not sure if I
was your father's grandfather.
Correct.
Okay.
And they had set up this party. They had catered it. They had tables, and they had the waiters and all the catering staff. And it was a big, big event, and everybody was there in their finery. And my father showed up. He walked, just a couple blocks in his
uh-huh.
flip-flops and his shorts and his T-shirt and walked in. And everybody was, wondering and coming up to him and wondering what possible new information can you tell us? Because they were all very interested in what he had to say.
Uh-huh.
And although I can't repeat exactly what he said, he uh-huh. thought it was a pile of manure.
Yes,
and,
yeah, rock, yeah.
And needless to say, he was not invited back. But
yes.
Essentially, that was the attitude from my family. And when I, later on in life, when I got my account, my churchward.com account, and got an email, I started to get emails of people asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And other people had not as many through email, but when I mm-hmm. developed a web presence, I just started getting questions about mm-hmm. what I knew about this and that. And for 10 years, I wrote back
wow.
and told them the same thing that my father had thought.
Uh-huh.
And that I wasn't interested in following up with it, and I thought it was a bunch of manure as well.
Right.
But actually, I hadn't looked at it.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't read a single word of any of his books. And when life gave me some time to undertake some research, I started
right.
reading his books, and I realized the different ways that his works have affected people. They've perhaps given lots of people impetus to think more things and think out of the box and look at how we interact as people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have, since approximately 2005, started up a website to start to document my research, and that's at my-mu.com, my-mu.com. And I started a podcast and started blog entries and doing articles and whatever I could do to, figure out what my great-grandfather was saying and whether it is what my father thought or what it
uh-huh.
is that other people think.
Uh-huh. Wow, that is very fascinating. And the thing is, too, I was just hearing you speak that sometimes, the way the conditioning goes, we just hear what our parents have said, and therefore that is our truth. But then we have these aha moments, and that came in the form of people contacting you, and then you started thinking, okay, well, maybe there's something into this. So I very, very much felt that your curiosity was piqued, because if all of these people did have an interest, well, then maybe there was something to it.
Absolutely, especially since the books are still in print,
yes.
and they're still selling.
Yes, and that's just pretty amazing, because this was back in the 30s, right, when the books came out originally?
Well, the original book came out in 1926, and
26.
James Last, okay. His last book was printed in 1935.
Okay, yeah, and linear time speaking, that's been a while. And
yeah,
so,
absolutely.
In other words, for people of this time to be still reading those books, that's amazing. And so, obviously, you have began researching this. And so, in other words, what you're saying is from people contacting you and that curiosity, that's what made you start researching this information.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Well,
and so,
my family does not receive any proceeds from any of my great-grandfather's books. I should mention that up front.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I didn't know.
Especially because of time when that was, you know, they didn't think about the royalties and having that written in and things like that, I'm sure.
Oh, they were all copyrighted.
Yeah.
And the royalties were passed along. And I believe in just the person who did inherit the royalties to my great-grandfather's books did sign the copyright over to either me or my father in 1969. But I just recently found that out.
Mm. Very interesting, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, Jack, let's first of all, would love to hear a little bit more about what your first book is about. And I know, you know, we're talking about the Lost Continent of Mu and things like that. And so please be sure and tell the listeners, for those that may be unfamiliar with that topic, give them a little bit of background on that as well.
All righty. In 1926, after quite a few years of research, my great-grandfather came out with The Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men.
Mm-hmm.
His book was, the premise of his book was that when he was on famine relief duty in India early in the 1860s or late 1860s, he befriended a rishi at one of the temples and was looking at the symbols written on the walls and trying to decipher them. And he became friends with the rishi, and the rishi and him started to engage in an interpretation of what the symbols were and helping my great-grandfather out. And they became friends, and after a period of time, the rishi brought out a box of clay tablets and brought them out and said that these were the oldest tablets that he knew about. They were from the Lost Continent of Mu, or maybe they were copies of tablets that were made in Mu,
mm-hmm.
which these tablets wrote about Mu and mentioned that it was a Pacific Ocean continent, that it had quite a large population. It had sunk about 12,000 years ago after some cataclysms, but that the people of Mu were, that's where the human race originated. He called it the Garden of Eden,
okay.
as opposed using Moses's dialect. And what his thought was, or James learned, that actually Moses was treated to an education from the Nicol Brotherhood. And the Nicol Brotherhood were the learned people of Mu that passed along the intelligence and the teachings that enabled them to maintain their level of society and their civilization. And that the reason the Bible departed from that early Nicol teachings that Moses had received is that Moses didn't tell Ezra. And so when Ezra translated the Bible, he didn't understand the underlying symbology of what he was translating. And so it is the Garden of Eden, according to my great-grandfather. And he wrote the first book, Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men.
Mm-hmm.
My research started with looking at that book. Obviously, it's a good place to start, I thought.
Right, and, absolutely.
And what I wanted to do was to go through and examine where each of the authors that he references, each of the books that he references, I have a listing of those in the appendices, and I wanted to put some extra notes in there to point to different people or other theories, other confirmations of his theories that were out there, and where just try to point to and gather them all together, and just to take a look at the book. Whereas individuals can pick it up, it is a reference book, and
mm-hmm.
people can look it up, can pick it up, and all the pages are the same as in the original.
Right.
Tried to do that so that the index would match the same copy that somebody else had from 20 or 30 or more years ago.
Uh-huh.
And there is an index, a couple of appendices, and I've added some 200 new notes to it so that people, if they want to, can pick it up and find out where his theory came from. And maybe it'll open a door to new understandings, or, you know, or maybe it'll, you know, it could open up into a whole new avenue of theories and speculation.
Yes, that's very fascinating. And I think that that's a great concept, too, because, you know, people, to me, very much like structure. And so by you doing that, that allows them to have that continuity.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that in the book, I'm not saying that I agree with everything he said,
right.
I don't sign up for everything, mm-hmm. but I do. But all I tried to do was go through and give people a point of reference.
Right.
Obviously, a lot of the scientists and philosophers today completely poo-poo it. They can just knock it straight out of the box because they say there was no Pacific Ocean continent.
Right.
But then again, what if James, when he read these tablets, was just in the wrong location? Like I mentioned at the conference, that perhaps this is maybe he got it confused in the area known as Sundaland, mm-hmm. during the last ice age might have been the location of Mu, or
right.
I don't know yet, but
yeah and I think
just
the interesting yeah you can't discard the information that came through, but absolutely the location. And we have to recognize the time frame when this research was originally being done. You know, there was not computers. There wasn't the spacecraft to have those overhead aerial shots and from space and things like that. None of that was available. So, you know, a lot of guesstimation in proximity was being done.
Well, and downright guessing sometimes, I would imagine.
Yes. Yes, and the thing is, too, is you know, once again, we can't discard the information, and there are those skeptical people that will take it all or nothing. They see everything as black and white rather than being a little flexible and seeing things with that gray aspect as well.
Well, another thing is that got me to research this is, mm-hmm. not so much all the theories of lost continents, mm-hmm. and ancient advanced civilizations, but the thought of the recognition of our shared human existence,
yes.
is what James, at the bottom line, understanding,
yes.
that we're all people, that
we
all came from the same gene pool,
mm-hmm.
and that we're all on this world together.
Yes, and that's even, I got chills with that, Jack, I have to tell you. I mean, because that is even much bigger than any of us can actually imagine. And the thing is sometimes it gets down to those basic DNA molecules. When we really see that we are of the same source energy, we're all having our own experiences, we're all connected, then why do we have to have this hostility and this hate and everything else? And I think it's time to come back to that time of peace and that time of love.
I'm right there with you.
Yes, yes. And so I have to just put this out there, and before we even begin focusing on any other questions, but for yourself personally, upon researching this information, especially with having this engineering background, I just have to ask, have you shifted your perception on things? Because I know very much left brain, you know, analytical, but this involves also believing in things that may not be something that we can see, because for one thing, it no longer exists at this time. And so it's having that flexibility and also working with that right brain attributes.
Actually, I have been a Tibetan Buddhist for a number of years, and which preceded my investigation in this. And it is from, that was another one of the reasons, in that I have seen things that I can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you can look it up on the internet about the Tibetan lamas,
mm-hmm.
that do the practice of one of the six yogas of Naropa called the Dumo. And they're able to take or be wrapped in a completely wet shawl. I'm not sure what the exact name is, but and they wrap it around their shoulders, and through their meditation and practice, they're able to dry it completely from their own body heat. I've also witnessed a Tibetan Lama reach into my 400-degree oven and pick out a pan and put it on the counter.
Wow.
And I looked at him and I said, "You're not supposed to do that in front of me, are you?" He said, "You won't tell anybody." So I can't tell him. I can't tell who did it, but I have seen it done. And he did not have hot pads on his hands or anything.
Wow.
I have seen things happen. So
Yes.
Absolutely. So perhaps maybe when I get to some of the later books on the cosmic forces of Mu that my great-grandfather wrote about, I can perhaps understand some of these things that that I have seen and don't understand now. But yes, it requires analysis, and maybe some more reading will get me there.
Yes, well, I think it involves trust too, just trust and believing and having that faith to know that there are things that we cannot explain. We just have to see it and feel it and allow it and go from there.
I'm still working on trying to figure it out.
Absolutely. that analytical side will always be there. Well, Jack, what's the basic premise then of James's theories? I know you touched on that. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that?
Well, James took what he had learned from these tablets and continued his travels through the Pacific and in Asia for a few years, and went on to subsequently talk. He became friends with Alice and Augustus Le Plongeon, who wrote a few books as well on their excavations at Chichen Itza and other places in the Yucatan. And after that, he, during his day job, was able to sue some steel companies because they stole his patent, and obtained quite a bit of money from it, and which he then, I believe, he purchased a large 7-acre lot up in some place on a unpronounceable lake in Connecticut, and then re-engaged in his studies, and I believe this was in 1913 or 1914, and from then until the 26 is when he obviously came out with his book. And essentially, he thought that there was a Pacific Ocean continent, and that this was where the beachhead of civilization first started. They started out rather low, but after a while, they eventually understood their minds and understood physical properties. According to James' work, people back then were able to do things that we're not able to do now. They had powers, which I have seen evidence of, but not all of, I haven't seen all the evidence, but I have seen evidence of some powers that I can't explain. But James says that they were capable of these powers and of these abilities.
Yes, that's very, very fascinating. So definitely the interest is there about researching all of these, your great-grandfather's theories. What is your next book about?
It's tentatively called The Stone Tablets of Mu. And in 1927, James got in touch with William Niven.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Niven had uncovered, he had been for 10, 12 years been excavating in the Mexico, the Valley of Mexico.
Okay.
And had unearthed 2,600 tablets, stone tablets, etched stone tablets. And James used them in the 1926 Lifting the Veil, Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men. He used a couple of those tablets and included an entire chapter of Niven's work in that volume. In 1927, he actually got in touch with William Niven, and they exchanged letters and Mr. Niven sent a whole bunch of his of images of his tablets to James. So for Christmas 1926, James took a took some of these tablets, about 22 of them, I believe, and created an interpretation. He gave two or three, four or five pages of printing, and then he printed out these, wrote up these tablets and sent it along to his publisher. It was never released in the public, but it has. It went to the University of Berkeley Library, and
okay.
It got stuck there.
Wow.
In the collection of his publisher, Mr. Rudge.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, a few years ago, someone sent me a PDF copy. And so I was able
yes.
to take the book, and I transcribed the writings and redid the images of the tablets. And I went through and gave some more background information, and I pinpointed where else everything in there is for instance, where other books these tablets are contained in or not contained in further mm-hmm. subsequent books, and perhaps how the interpretation of some of these tablets changed over the years. There's
wow.
also, I provided a history of what the news and the public thought and whatnot of the tablets were contained in the news back then.
Mm-hmm.
So I
Amazing.
Went through and tried to discuss. One of the reasons, though, that I wrote it was that nobody has gone back to look at those tablets.
Mm-hmm.
And they're absolutely unlike the ones that James said he saw. These
mm-hmm.
people saw. There's actually pictures of them. Photographs, rather, and,
oh, wow.
and hand drawings. These, there were 2,600 tablets.
Wow.
Unfortunately, none of today's anyone has gone through to make a study of them and
mm-hmm.
to tell us what actually they did say or they do say.
Mm-hmm.
And so
wow.
I did bring that out in the book, and maybe I can push them a little, and somebody will take the opportunity to look at them. And rather than be dissuaded because they think they're anytime that someone in the current mainstream starts to mention my great grandfather, they look at it as the third rail, and they're probably feel they're going to be electrocuted at any moment and lose their job, tenure, savings plan, and their whole life
and everything
disappear.
Else. Yeah, so maybe it's even a little bit like the Area 51 thing, you know, different scope, but same concept. People are fearful of things that they can't explain or they don't want to talk about or they tuck down.
Right. And so
they just keep people quiet.
Absolutely. But I think it's valuable. I mean, there's these 2,600 tablets out there.
Mm-hmm. And do you know where these tablets are located, per se, physically?
No one has found the tablets yet. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
And the book, Buried Cities, Forgotten Gods, which
mm-hmm.
is William Niven's biography, and in there they state that William Niven had a storefront in Mexico City.
Okay.
And that out of all the artifacts that he found, he always provided the Mexican government the best one of any of them.
Hmm.
And anything they wanted. And he got to keep the rest. It was
okay.
It was one way that he had.
It was a trade-off, yes.
Well, it was one thing that he had so that he could continue his diggings. From one person's estimates that he had uncovered thousands of tons of materials. And He was, you know, gave it up quite willingly and happily to the government so he could continue. And he sold some in his store. And when
wow.
it became time for him to move to the United States, back to the United States, from what I understand, his they were all back boxed in wooden boxes. They were carefully wrapped and. When they didn't get the paperwork from the Mexican government to be able to ship them, to the United States. From what I understand, they were buried in somebody's backyard, and that's all mentioned in the in the biography, Forgotten Gods, Forgotten Buried Cities, Forgotten Gods. Now, not too long ago, the interest in these tablets hasn't been over. I got some letters recently from 1975 where a Mexican government official wrote to Howard Carasi, who was my great-grandfather's nephew, and he was the person who obtained the royalty checks and inherited my great-grandfather's things, and they wrote to him to ask him where the tablets were. And it was it wasn't just one or two letters. It was three very urgent letters. Mm-hmm. And I covered this in a blog entry. And I wrote back to them to ask them about, you know, what do you... It actually had numbers on the letter. It was an official letter and whatnot. And I wrote back to the government that particular department is no longer in existence. They've reorganized the government, but the group that took over for them, I wrote them to inquire as to what information they had. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, I guess my letter should have been written in Spanish, and because I don't believe they understood my question.
Right.
But I have since found a friend who does speak good Spanish, and uh-huh. we have developed a letter, and I'm waiting to hear back.
Oh, very
on what
good.
They found.
Very
but
good.
The urgency was such that I believe that they even asked him to come to the Mexican consulate in New York City to talk about these
stones.
Oh,
my goodness. Wow, so that is very intriguing. I definitely feel, first of all, that having persistence, you know, and not necessarily in a forceful way, but almost in that subtle way, I'm definitely feeling that I think that there will be some answers. And I definitely commend you, Jack, for, you know, having that fortitude to continue, because this is very intriguing and fascinating information. And this is a lot of information. As you were talking, and I kept thinking about what we studied in humanities with the Mesopotamia and things like that. And, you know, there's so much fascinating information, historical information, that most people are unaware of because it's just simply not available to us.
Well, James, in subsequent books, does go through, for instance, the second book, aside from the book that he wrote in Christmas 1927, was mm-hmm. The Children of Mu, that was released in 1931. And in it, he goes through in quite detailed terms how these different civilizations, for instance, he knows it was the Naga people from Mu that mm-hmm. first settled in Burma and then India and then became the Akkadians, in which set up the Mesopotamian civilizations.
Wow, very fascinating. So let's just backtrack just a little bit. And for the listeners, will you tell them about your grandfather, and exactly would you describe him as an archaeologist, as a researcher? What would you call him?
There's quite a bit to describe my great-grandfather. His purpose for being over in Sri Lanka or Ceylon at the time was that he was a tea planter.
Okay.
And after that, he traveled through the Pacific. He is, in some of his correspondence, there's an Uncle Willie mentioned, and I believe that's William Churchward, who was the consulate to Samoa, and he wrote a couple books on his consulate, and my consulate in Samoa is one of them. And he traveled throughout the South Pacific, and when he got to the United States, he wrote a couple books they're probably called brochures about hunting and fishing in the Maine wilderness for some of the railroad companies.
Hmm.
And he also patented some railroad things, some railroad ties and different things for back then.
Right.
He also wrote for some recreation magazines telling people how to fish and hunt and it was, I've got some of that on my website as well.
That's
and then he did have quite a number of patents, like 45 or so. And
wow.
So I would also call him, other than a tea planter, an adventurer. I'd also
yes.
call him an engineer.
Uh-huh.
And he developed nickel, chromium, vanadium steel, which was used on all the ships of war for the United States for World War One and prior.
Wow.
And that, he found out that some other steel companies, and I'm not going to mention any names,
right.
some other steel companies had actually were using his formula for the steel, and he sued them. And got an enormous, back then it was an enormous sum of money.
Yeah.
And then he moved up to Connecticut and I guess resumed his research. And after that, you could call him an author.
Yes, that is very fascinating. And it's always, really wonderful to hear those backstories because especially, this is passed down through generations, that family information. Well, if your father's family, kind of thought some of the stuff that he was talking about was, scoffed at, then we have to look at other things that perhaps there was other parts of his life that they were very proud of, so they openly shared, but then in the same aspect, there was those aspects that they just wanted to keep tucked away.
Well, as in my family, as far as my great-grandfather was concerned, he was tucked away.
Yes.
And all this information I've learned, I have not
from
learned
your own
from any
research.
Family member.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I am astounded hearing everything because, the patents, the 45 patents, that's amazing. And I know in reading your bio that you have patents as well, as therefore you come from four generations of it. So that, is just really cool. I just have to say really cool.
Thank you.
Well, Jack, let's talk a little bit about you. And, you're moving forward. You've got your websites, mymoo.com, and that's my-moo.com. And you've also got your website, jack.churchward.com, and that's C-H-U-R-C-H-W-A-R-D. You've got lots of great information, but let's talk about you. And I know you're busy writing and doing the research and everything like that, but what else would you like to share about you?
I also have a full-time job.
I know that.
I'm an engineer during the day, except this afternoon. And thank you for having an afternoon interview.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm delighted, that you are a part of it. And the really great thing, is
Hello? 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 I seem to be disconnected. Hello?
Okay, and I apologize for that. We just had a moment of technical difficulties, and so I'm going to get Jack back on the line. Let me just give Jack a quick call. I apologize the inconvenience.
Hello.
Hi, Jack. We had a little bit of technical difficulty, and I've never had this happen, and this is exactly 2 years today since I did my first show.
I'm don't know what to say.
Yeah, I don't know what to say either, but I was like, what just happened? So I immediately called back in and called you. So here we are. We're resuming, and we were talking about having that balance. Maybe this was a sign from spirit. I don't know. But let's see. What other aspects of your job / the other job, because in technically you have two jobs, let's talk about you. And so I know that diving in and doing this research and such, that obviously you're learning about your family, you're learning about your great-grandfather and his books. I have to say, just from hearing the energy of what you're talking about, that it's also very much an opportunity for you to have that connection that you never had before.
Well, it's obviously karma.
Yes.
I needed to connect, find out what
yes.
he was saying. And
well, that's a good way to at it.
My wife does say sometimes that I must be him reincarnated, but I'm not so sure about that. It's been quite a few years.
Yeah, I got chills. I don't know. I kind of feel like you definitely, you know, have this connection, and I have no doubt that he's assisting you from the other side to help you have this knowledge and wisdom and also this fortitude to do the research and to move forward, because I'm sure, no doubt, some of it can be very daunting at times.
Well, sometimes waiting for information and trying to, you know, it's just, unfortunately, the only way I can do the research is to make inquiries and keep reading, and hopefully I can gain a little hint here and there so that I can follow up and find out the whole truth along the way.
Yes.
And I have to rely on other people that perhaps know that obviously know more than I do about certain subjects. So I'm still learning about my great-grandfather and what he wrote about. And I rely a whole lot on what other people can provide, old letters, old books, and, you know, their own understanding of things that I'm missing.
Right. Yes, and sometimes I'm just going back to this movie I saw recently, and I can't even think of the name, but sometimes there's things right in front of us. They just have to be revealed when we're ready.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So you have to be told that they're you have to be told that they're important.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we, you know, and it's our own perception and our own evaluation, but I feel that sometimes, you know, we either discount things that we think are not probable or possible, or it's our imagination, and in the same sense, those really big things, we either see them as insignificant, or we don't even know how to interpret them. And I think a lot of that's just our human nature and our analytical mind, because we are human.
Well, I'm, like I said, I'm just trying to overcome the innate prejudice against it, I should say.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to term it. Yes.
But that's the way I was raised on it. I haven't always been studying his materials, but I hope that I have become a better person by understanding more of what he wrote about.
Yes, well, I have to ask too, since you brought that subject up, do you feel any guilt or remorse about hearing the stories or non-stories from your father, and then even your own reaction to some of the emails, you know, prior to recognizing the importance of everything? I mean, looking back, and I know we're not supposed to dwell in the past, but we always have those moments where we think, well, if I only would have, you know, done this or done that a little bit differently.
Actually, I wouldn't change a single thing. I obviously had the wrong view, mm-hmm. and I wasn't exactly very intelligent to dismiss it before I had the opportunity to look through it. So I don't have any regrets.
Good, good. And I think that's good, because we have to look at divine timing. Everything happens when it's supposed to.
Absolutely.
And I know Dolores Cannon, Ozark Mountain Publishing, have gratefully published your book, and undoubtedly they're going to publish the next one, and definitely recognize that she can see the importance of getting this information out there to a widespread audience, and also offering you that opportunity to provide those presentations.
Well, I wasn't ready for them at first, but now I have practiced a bit, and
Well, you're stepping into
it. Helpful.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, I have, you know, just to tell you, Jack, with our own interaction and meeting in person and even here connecting, you know, very engaging. And I think the more, and I'm saying this with love, the more that you are who you are, people will totally resonate with the information coming through, even if at times we have to reference notes and things like that. It's a history that you're sharing, and I think that's wonderful.
Thank you.
So just keep being you, and keep bringing forth this information that you've researched, and undoubtedly you spend a lot of time. I can't imagine that you have much free time between writing and also doing the full-time job that you do, but you also have that balance where you can devote time to the research and writing the books.
Yes, it's fun. Challenging.
Yes, my dogs are definitely talking with that today, too. So, yes, they're agreeing as well. Normally they're quiet, but once again, we've had two things today, and am I going to react? No, it's not going to be letting it affect me because it's all about being in the moment.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, Jack, is there anything like that you would like to add before we close out the show today?
I'd like to say that the first book, Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men, is now entering its second printing.
Very good. Congratulations.
That's the first book. And hopefully the book tentatively titled Stone Tablets of Mu will be available real soon, but I'll hold off on that.
It'll happen when it's supposed to. Obviously, once
absolutely.
You finish writing it, it has to go to the editor, and then the publisher makes their changes and such. So it is a time-consuming process.
Yes, but it is almost finished. I mean, I have a few markups to make corrections, and then it's off.
Yes. Well, very good. Congratulations. So do you have any upcoming presentations in your area or anywhere else that you would like to mention for the listeners?
Well, I am going to appear on Just Energy Radio next Thursday at 8 p.m.
Very good. And would you know the URL? Is it justenergy.com?
I believe so.
Okay.
That's about all I have. I did write to Mr. Nouri of Coast to Coast. I haven't heard
very
back
good.
From them yet.
Yes, we had the opportunity to meet him. Maybe you should have raised your hand and asked the question during the presentation.
Yeah, like Patty did. But
yes.
I did.
Yes, that
but
was...
I'm a more quiet person, though, I think.
Yes, quiet person. Well, for the listeners, if there's any of you that would like to see Jack join George Nouri on his show, send George an email, and that will help assist getting Jack on the show, no doubt.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so how's that, Jack?
That'll work.
That'll work. Well, listeners, once again, I invite you to visit Jack's website, jack.churchward.com, churchward.com. Also, he has a website, mymu.com, and that's my-mu.com. His book, Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men, is published through Ozark Mountain Publishing. You can find his book through his website, through Ozark Mountain, as well as all other venues, such as Barnes & Noble's and Amazon.com. Jack,
and if they go to my website, if they go to my bookstore on the website, I have signed copies available if someone would like a signed copy.
Absolutely. I encourage you to go to his website, because that will be the best thing, because then you'll have his signature, and that will even be more personable. So definitely go straight to his website to purchase the books through there. Well, Jack, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate this time immensely.
Well, thank you for having me on. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Well, listeners, I'd like to take just a moment and mention some upcoming events. This weekend, I will be in Oklahoma City at the Spirit Fair. You can visit spiritfair.com. The next Saturday, October 12th, I'll be at the Unity Center of Tulsa offering a group reading event from 6:30 to 9 p.m. I'll be teaching a Reiki 1 and 2 class here at Langley, Oklahoma that Sunday, October the 13th. And then I will be in Topeka, Kansas, November 2nd and 3rd at the Topeka Mind, Body, Spirit Fair. November 9th and 10th, I'll be in Tulsa at the Tulsa Spirit Fair. Once again, that's spiritfair.com. And on Saturday, November the 16th, I'll be a part of Love's Whisper. This is a collaboration with three other psychic mediums and a sound therapist, a didgeridoo player. So you can visit my website, ShellyRWilson.com. Click on the upcoming events to learn more about that. In addition, I've just added a fundraising event for the Center for Spiritual Living in Northwest Arkansas, Fayetteville, Arkansas. We're going to do this on Halloween, October 31st. So this is going to be a fun event. Once again, that information has just been put on my website. Some of my upcoming guests on Monday, October 7th, Sue Frederick will be talking about her new book, Bridges to Heaven. October the 9th, Faye Hart will be joining me talking about her new campaign. October 14th, I have psychic medium Bill Phillips. October the 16th, I have the fellow collaborators Brandy, James, Joseph, and David, and myself, part of Love's Whisper. And I believe that is everything that I have to mention. Once again, visit my website, ShellyRWilson.com. I invite you to learn more about me as well as the services I provide. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and have a blessed day. This concludes today's segment of The Shelley Wilson Show. Until next time, remember, this is your time. I encourage you to live an authentic life, be the best you can be, and love yourself in the process. Much love and many blessings to each of you.